Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Bees are essential to our agricultural infrastructure and food production. For the better part of a decade, a devastating problem has caused massive die-offs in the honeybee population. The term colony collapse disorder has been attached to this phenomenon, but two leading bee experts say CCD is just one part of a much wider problem affecting bees, butterflies, bats, and other pollinators. Marianne and Jim Fraser are bee experts from Penn State University, and they'll be in Vermont tomorrow to give a talk on their research. When I spoke with them this morning, they explained how CCD fits into the bigger picture of bee health.
Yes, I think the term was coined originally to describe what was thought to be a new phenomenon. And as we've begun to look at the interaction of multiple factors that could be contributing to this, I think the evolving view among researchers is that the symptoms characteristics of CCD is just one special situation that is representative of a broader spectrum of interactions of factors, that all of which lead to declines of bees. And because it's multiple factors interacting, pesticide residues, diseases, parasitic mites, viruses, because these things can be at different levels at different times, and each colony has a different history of what they've done, it makes doing cause and effect experiments very challenging. And so it's a very difficult research agenda. It's kind of like trying to unravel the cause of cancer with about, you know, 1/100th of the researchers and 1/1000th of the money available to do it. So it's really a difficult situation.
Marianne Fraser, that's part of your research, is doing these experiments and trying to look at the impact of various things on the bees. And you look specifically at pesticides. Can you talk about your research?
It's interesting. There are a lot of folks now who are involved in the work on pesticides. It's a very complex, difficult area of research. But our work originally was to look at CCD, non-CCD colonies, sick colonies, healthy colonies, and look at the pesticide load in those colonies. And it was pretty shocking to us when we looked at a spectrum of colonies across the country, the diversity and levels of pesticides that we were seeing coming into honeybee colonies. It was significant. And once we figured out that, yes, pesticides are an important part of this picture in terms of honeybee health. Now the question is, you know, what role are they playing? How are they impacting the health of individual bees, of colonies, and of honeybee populations and pollinator populations? So that in and of itself is an incredibly complex and difficult question to answer, in part because the pesticides are not there singly, they're there multiply. On average, we find 6 pesticides per colony in the pollen, which is the protein source that bees use, particularly to feed their brood, their babies. And so when you have multiple pesticides with multiple modes of action, there's concern about interactions. So that's one big issue that we face. The other is that pesticides don't always kill bees outright. Sometimes they do if they're exposed to a toxic level, but oftentimes they're exposed to what we call sublethal levels, which are levels that can do things like reduce their lifespan, interfere with their ability to communicate and forage and navigate, interfere with their physiology, like maybe the development of some of their glands. And so these sublethal effects are sort of very insidious and can cause colonies to decline, but over a period of time, and you might not recognize them as the impacts of pesticides. And the last big area that we in our particular lab are really interested in are the inert ingredients that are part of pesticide formulation. Oftentimes, these inerts are actually the major component of the formulation, as opposed to the active ingredient, which might be present at a very small percentage of the formulation. And it turns out that these inert ingredients, which are not disclosed and are often not regulated, are in fact toxic to non-target organisms. So this is a big area of concern and one that we're really focused on right now.
Given the research that you're doing and what you're finding out about how these pesticides affect bee populations and pollinator populations, are you at the point where you are ready to come out and make recommendations or suggest regulations? Because obviously, pesticide use is a huge part of industrial agriculture in the United States.
Yeah, I've been acting as a science advisor to the National Honeybee Advisory Board, which is a group of some of the largest beekeepers in the country who are speaking for the two national organizations. And for the last 7 years, we've been interacting with people at EPA on a quite regular basis, trying to increase their awareness of the problems that beekeepers are facing, the role of pesticides, some of the limitations in the risk assessment process that are used to register pesticides, limitations in the language that's on the label that people use to direct how they apply pesticides. There are a lot of difficulties that need to be overcome, and we've been working diligently trying to get EPA's cooperation in making these changes.
It sounds like you've been working towards it, but don't feel like you've completely got the EPA on your side on this?
No, we're a long way from having the situation solved. There are just so many things in place that are difficult to change that the pace of change is glacial with respect to the needs for change in the field on an annual basis. Beekeepers are still losing significant numbers of bees each year. We estimate that they've spent more than $1.2 billion of their own money to replace lost bees over the last 6 years. That's been almost completely uncompensated by any government program to help them out. So they've really been hung out there on their own.
In the absence of federal regulation, you would need to get farmers who are using pesticides and or the pesticide manufacturers to change their ingredients. Do you see either of those things happening?
Well, yes, that's a very good point. In fact, we've been working together with producers and producer groups and with the pesticide industry representatives to try to make these changes. Everyone has a slightly different perspective, as you might guess. Most farmers want to do the right thing, but they're not always sure what the right thing is or what the timing needs to be. The pesticide manufacturers are willing to make changes, and they're working to make some of those changes. But, of course, they've got a huge investment in the products that are already in the marketplace, and trying to get those removed, even if there are problems associated with them, has many barriers to try to make that happen. So it is a team effort to some extent. It could certainly be smoother than it is, but I think everyone is aware of the problem and trying to address it in their own individual ways.
Jim and Marianne, when you travel to places like Vermont to give talks about bees, what do you tell people who are interested in bees and worried about this issue about what they can actually do to have an impact?
Yeah, it's interesting. There are things that people can do. For one thing, you know, it's become quite fashionable to have lawns that are green without any, you know, dandelions or clover. And in fact, those are, you know, important sources of nutrition for pollinators. And so we try to get people to think about more responsible use of pesticides, in particular herbicides. It turns out that, you know, like everything else, you know, habitat is being lost. And in the case of pollinators, that habitat is, you know, blooming plants and flowers. So the other thing is planting for pollinators, actually thinking about turning your lawn into a pollinator garden, or at least a piece of your lawn into a pollinator garden, someplace that's really friendly for, you know, monarch butterflies and bumblebees, that kind of thing. So by using, you know, responsible use of herbicides and planting for pollinators, we think that this can really be beneficial to pollinator populations. And people can also buy honey from local beekeepers. So I think people being aware of the food supply, being aware of where their food comes from and how important pollinators are, just understanding the food supply and how important these components are, the roles that they play, is important.
Mary Ann Fraser is a researcher with Penn State's Extension Service. Jim Fraser is a professor emeritus of entomology at Penn State. They will be giving a presentation tomorrow evening at the Echo Center in Burlington on the causes and controversies of the illnesses affecting honeybees. You can find more information about their talk at vpr.net. Just click on Vermont Edition. Jim and Mary Ann, thank you very much for speaking with me.
It's our pleasure.
Thank you for having us.